started, since we only have an hour, and this is not a topic that you can actually cover thoroughly in an hour, but I don't know what you're expecting, and I hope you didn't come thinking you're going to get all the answers. I think this is one of those things, it's kind of like parenting, but the more you learn about it, the more you realize that you don't know, and that's very much the way it is. But I'm wanting this to be a discussion, not me lecturing. Just a little bit about myself. My name is Jeremy Yoder. We were in Bangladesh for almost 3 years. Before that, we lived in the city of Canton for a couple of years. And in both places, we were faced with a lot of poverty. In Bangladesh, there's beggars everywhere. There are, there's needy people everywhere you look. In Canton, the community we lived in was, a lot of people were on welfare, a lot of people lived in government housing. There's a big difference. There's a lot of similarities, there's a lot of differences between the poor here and the poor there. And we're not necessarily going to look at all the distinctions between the two, but just keep that in mind as we're talking today, that poverty is not just something that's over there. It's something that's around us. It might look different, but it's here. One other thing, I'll just say this, in Bangladesh, when we first moved there, it was easy to be critical of the way that other people address this issue. That's a very real problem, because we would hear words like dependency and phrases like rice Christians, and we didn't like it. It felt sometimes to us like people were saying you shouldn't help the needy. And that's not at all what they were saying. We understand so much more now with what some of those issues are about, but we haven't figured out what to do about all of them yet. I want to look, first of all, just at a few verses, just to establish in our minds that there's no question that there's a biblical mandate for helping the poor. This isn't something that is a new thing to us. This is scripture in Matthew 25, and we're not going to turn to all of these, but Matthew 25, this is the passage where it's the least of these. It's, Lord, or God says, it's the passage that talks about feeding or clothing the naked and feeding the hungry and visiting the sick, visiting the people in prison. And it says, as much as you've done it to the least of these, you've done it to me. 1 John 3:17 says, but if anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need, yet closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him? That's pretty direct right there. Most of us, I have this world's goods, there's no question. And I've seen plenty of people in need. And I've seen plenty of people in need that I haven't given to. James 1:27, religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their affliction and to keep oneself unstained from the world. Isaiah 58 is an interesting passage. It's not one either that we're going to take time to turn to, but sometime if you want, you can look at it. It's talking about what's an acceptable fast to the Lord, and it's talking about a group of people that really wanted to please God, and so they were fasting, and God said, this isn't the fast that I choose. I don't want this fast where you go without food, you deny yourself, but then you don't. And there's a list of things that you don't do. You aren't helping the oppressed, the afflicted. The fast that I choose is, and you need to read the passage. It's an excellent passage, an excellent reminder that we can look good and still be neglecting the very things that God is calling us to. It was interesting that Christians in history have been known for, that's one of the characteristics of Christians, is helping the poor. This was Emperor Julian the Apostate was a 4th century Roman emperor. And at that time, Roman cities were terrible places to live. People would come into the cities to find work, and they didn't have proper sewage systems, of course. They didn't have good water sources. They couldn't properly sustain the number of people that were coming in. And in reality, the only reason that the city's populations didn't decline is because more people kept coming in. Because of disease and everything, the populations would have actually declined from people dying. But Christians actually stood out. Christians didn't run out. It's interesting, Enos was saying at the presentation, he said, we tend to move from countryside to countryside. Well, there, the Christians were in the city. Christians made a difference in the city. And Emperor Julian the Apostate was an anti-Christian emperor. He did not like the Christians. They were just really a thorn in his flesh. And I really like this quote by him. He says, "Why do we not observe that it is the Christians' benevolence to strangers, their care for the graves of the dead, and the pretended holiness of their lives that have done most to increase atheism?" And by atheism, he meant unbelief in their pagan gods. He said, "For it's disgraceful that when no Jew ever has to beg, and the impious Galileans, or the Christians, support not only their own poor, but ours as well, all men see that our people lack aid from us." So Julian recognized it. He saw it in the Christians, and he said, "It's kind of embarrassing to us. We look at them, and they're not only taking care of their own, but they're taking care of our poor." And so it's something that has characterized Christianity. But now we struggle sometimes with how exactly are we supposed to help. And that's what I want to look at. We're going to break up into groups and discuss some things at some point. But first of all, as a group here, I want to think about a very simple question. What is poverty? I don't want long answers. I would like, if you have 1, 2, 3 word answers, what are some words that come to your mind when you think of poverty?
Beggars.
Beggars.
Genuine need.
Genuine need.
Hunger.
Hunger.
Lacking necessities.
Lacking necessities.
Laziness.
Laziness.
Homeless.
Did you say homeless? Homeless. Anyone else?
Helpless.
Helpless. Okay. Okay. I want to hand these out quickly. I'm going to have about 4 or 5 people come and just, there's enough for everybody to have one. The papers we're handing out, these have, on one page, and the first page we're going to look at is Voices of the Poor. Let's see, someone back here, grab a pile of that. Yes, hopeless. I don't know if we can fit it. We'll get it. Okay, just take a minute to read over the Voices of the Poor. These are quotes gathered by World Bank of people who are talking about what it's like to live in poverty. And as you read that, think about some words that you think that one of these people might use to describe poverty. Okay, anybody, if you have any, looking over this, what are some words that you see, either words or ideas that you see in there that that you think might, that these people might use to characterize poverty?
Terrible.
Terrible.
Shame.
Shame.
Garbage.
Garbage.
Never ending.
Never ending.
Constant effort.
Constant effort.
Language.
Fear.
Fear.
Loneliness,
yes.
Cursed.
No voice.
Depression.
Actually, just resize it all so it fits. Just this. Okay, a few more that I had thought of would inferiority, powerlessness, humiliation, broken relationships. What I'm trying to get at here is, and the distinction isn't completely clear, but if you look at the two lists. There is a little bit of a difference in the way that we as North Americans, as middle class people, tend to describe poverty, and the way that people who are in extreme poverty, the way that they look at poverty. If you talk to people who are poor, who really are poor, who don't know where their next meal is coming from, of course they talk a bit about the lack of necessities. They talk about hunger. But a lot of times what you'll hear, and if you look at what some of these people said, there's this overwhelming feeling of hopelessness, of I'm never going to get out of this. There's nothing is ever going to change. Every day I'm afraid of the next. Today we're fine, tomorrow they're going to throw us out. And completely powerless. No voice. It's very much the way that they feel. They feel very completely helpless. When we think about addressing poverty, and right now we're just talking about ideas, we're going to get a little more practical in a little bit here, but when we're talking about addressing poverty, it's fairly important to understand what we are, what we're actually addressing, what the problem is. And if you have a doctor who misdiagnoses what's wrong with you, the treatment he gives you is probably not going to do you a whole lot of good. It's possible that it'll make you feel better for a little bit, but really, if he misses it, you're probably going to end up hurting worse in the future. And that kind of applies to the way that we address poverty too. If we don't really know what it is that we're addressing, if we don't really understand what the problem is, then our solutions and our fixes may end up not being that helpful. can you go down? Let's put together a list of our ideas, and I don't know if this will come together as a list or not. But what would you see as success in addressing poverty? Now, I know that I want to talk on a local level as well. So I gave you quotes from people overseas, but there's poverty in our neighborhoods as well. And I don't know where you live. I don't know if your next door neighbor is poor or if you have to go across town to find someone poor. I don't know. But what would you think, what are some ideas that you might have of what would success in addressing poverty actually look like? You might not be able to do it in one or two words. You might need to give a longer idea. That's fine. But any ideas, what does success actually look like? Okay, showing them how to provide for themselves. Okay, and are you referring to among who? Okay, so creating awareness of poverty among people who aren't in poverty.
Opportunity.
Okay, giving opportunity. Okay, helping them to understand that they have worth.
Telling them that God has a purpose for them.
Okay, making sure they understand God has a purpose for them. You know, I have put in a little plug for a book here. This book, When Helping Hurts, is an excellent book, and some of you may have read it. I've read a couple of books on this subject, and this one is by far my favorite. This is a book that it talks about not only poverty overseas, but poverty on a local level. What churches can do, and what churches maybe shouldn't do when addressing poverty. And one thing that the author talks about is the fact that we live in relationship. And we don't only live in relationship we live in a number of different relationships. Of course, we have our relationship with God, and that's the spiritual aspect of our lives. We live in relationship with ourselves, so what we think of ourselves, our self-worth, that's our psychological, our how we feel about ourselves. We live in relationship with other people, so that's our social relationships, and then we also live in relationship with creation, and that's primarily concerned with the physical. And when we think of poverty, we tend to think of poverty as a lack of necessities. That's somebody's poor because they don't have. They don't have money, they don't have food, they don't have lodging, they don't have clothes, they don't have health insurance, they don't have health care, they don't have whatever. We think of it in terms of lack of something physical. But if we realize that we're not only physical beings, we're also social, we have a spiritual relationship, we are psychological beings, we understand that we can't just throw physical solutions at the problem. We can't just throw money at the problem, because the problem goes a lot deeper than that. When we were living in, if you think about it, and the welfare system at times has certainly contributed to poverty rather than alleviating it, incentivizing not working. And I remember when we were living in Canton, we had a number of kids that liked to come to our house. One of these boys, his name was DeVay, he came from a really bad home situation. He had five brothers and sisters. They had four fathers between the six of them. His oldest brother was in and out of juvenile prison. His next older brother was coming to our kids' club, but he was, I took him with me somewhere one time and somewhere where my mom was running a prize. It was a fundraiser, and my mom was in there. He went into the room where my mom was working with the door prizes and found out later that he stole a McDonald's gift certificate. And his older brothers were DeVay came over to my house one time, and he came over with a bag of food. And I asked him where he got it. He said, "Oh, he got it at the church down the road." And there was some good food, there was some junk food in it. But DeVay was rooting through it. If he wanted something, he ate it. If he didn't want it, he pitched it. He threw it away. He wasn't grateful for the food. He didn't really care where it came from. It was just free food that somebody gave him. The church down the street was not trying to hurt him. They weren't trying to contribute to the problem. But in my opinion, what that church was teaching him was that, number one, you can get what you want without paying for it. Number two, you're not really worth a whole lot. We have to give you stuff. And number three, you're probably never actually going to make much of yourself. His setting already told him that. And the church just giving him things, while it was well-meaning, I don't think it was that helpful. There's a very interesting story in here, and it addresses what he calls the God complex. And sometimes, and I don't know how many of you have interacted with poor people, whether at a homeless shelter or beggars on the street or what, but we do have an unfortunate tendency to consider ourselves better than them. As much as we don't want to, we do. It's really difficult not to. And there's a very interesting story in here, I thought, and I just wanted to relay that to you yet before we go on. There was a church in, it doesn't say which city, it was in a prominent American city, and this church decided to reach out to the African American residents of a nearby housing project. This area had lots of unemployment, drug problems, all kinds of problems. So this church, they got together a toy drive for Christmas. They got together a bunch of toys for the children in this project. And so there's these, and these are professionals, these are, you know, middle to upper class white people going into an African American housing project and handing out toys to the kids. And they went in, and at first it was really, really awkward. But the children loved it. And the mothers were happy, their children were happy. The children, the people came back from it, and they were so excited. They had helped this neighborhood, they had made a difference. They had these children whose parents couldn't afford Christmas presents, they provided Christmas presents for them. It felt so good, they decided they're going to do all, and so they kept on doing projects throughout the year. They would go and they would give them, they did projects at Easter and at different times. They handed out turkeys at Thanksgiving. But after a few years, the pastor started having trouble getting volunteers for these trips into the ghetto to hand out things to the people. And he started asking around a little bit, and this was the answer he got. "We're tired of trying to help these people out. We've been bringing them things for several years, but their situation never improves. They just sit there in the same situation year in and year out. Have you ever noticed that there are no men in the apartments when we deliver the toys? The residents are all unwed mothers who just keep having babies in order to collect bigger and bigger welfare checks. They don't deserve our help." And the author of this book said, in reality, there was a different reason that there weren't very many men in the apartments when the toys were delivered. He said, "When the fathers of the children heard the Christmas carols outside the front doors and saw the presents for their kids from the peepholes, they ran out the back doors of their apartments because they were embarrassed that they weren't providing for their families, and now these other people are coming in and handing things out." And it ended up causing the men in these households to have even lower self-worth, and their families are getting free things from somewhere else, they're not providing for their families. It ended up not really helping the problem overall at all. And I think it's something to be really aware of when we're talking about poverty, when we're addressing poverty, when we're interacting with people, not to have this God complex where I'm better than you. And I don't think there's a single person here that would ever say that, but I suspect that some of us feel it at times. We really need to be careful not to take that God complex into our interactions with people. I would like us to, what time is it? Where's the, okay, we have half an hour. I would like us to break up, and you can do it in your tables, or you can combine tables. I'd say anywhere from 3 to 8 people get together in groups. And I've got some scenarios on the backside of those Voices of the Poor. I would like you to take about 10 minutes, get together, look at those scenarios, talk about them, get some ideas for what you would do. We're not going to have a lot of time, but I'm hoping to hear from some of you some ideas of what you can do. You know what? Just to make sure that we get all of them covered, why don't these three tables start with number 3? And you start with number 2, and you guys start with number 1. Move on, get them all done if you can, but that way we at least have some answers from each one. And you'll have about 12 minutes.
Thank you.
money. I wonder if you know how it was.
Yes. The way they had it set up, do you remember how the room got all set up? You had to put a number in there. So you had to put 0 in if you weren't attending. Well, that or people just didn't.
Yes. I would like to hear what we have to discuss. Everything he says is being recorded. Okay, you have 2 more minutes.
What?
Okay, I know you don't have all the problems solved, but we can at least throw some ideas out there, help each other think through them. Some of these scenarios are, and I know there's only three of them, but they do come out of my, out of our personal experience, but we don't have the answers for them yet, unfortunately, so that's why I gave them to you. I want to hear from a few of you, just some things. Maybe you don't have a full answer, maybe you just have some part answers. Let's just open it up. This can be a discussion. We have about 15 minutes to talk about this. So let's start with, which group did I tell you to, I told you all to do all of them if you have time. But let's start with number one, and this one would be from outside the U.S. What thoughts do you have? What ideas do you have? And this is open to anybody, but specifically this area, I told you to start with this one.
Well, I think it's just something brought up, the idea of passive norm. If we have money to give to you, but instead of paying us back, you find someone later on, once you get your staff, you find someone else and be able to help them out in their situation if they're on their feet.
Okay, so are you saying that you're suggesting giving him the money and then saying, hey, down the road, then you give somebody else money. Okay?
He kind of looked at it as a pretty big positive that he was already working,
mm-hmm.
and he was showing some characteristics to take care of the problems, maybe not quite as nicely as he would have liked. It is a real big issue that he doesn't have the money to do what he thinks he needs to do to improve. And the solution looks like supply the $500. That would be pretty good bet. And I think our group agreed pretty much that you should give them the $500. But you should be aware there is a larger issue there as well than that. And we put the same thing, definitely teach them the principle of your help, continue helping as well. Change your lifestyle, and if that's what it takes. Maybe it's already there, we don't know. And then the other one is, we didn't discuss it very far, but does giving this money to this man, gentleman, further the kingdom of God? That would be an important question to answer. If it was an ungodly profession, maybe the answer should be no.
Okay. Are you able? able to hear in the back for the most part there? No? Okay. Yeah, he brought up a number of things. He did say that they would have been they would basically be in favor of helping him out, and that one concern would be what type of profession he's involved in, whether it's a godly profession. But the definitely it seems that he's at least trying to find work. He's trying to work, and so there does seem to be some. It does seem wise to help him out in order to allow him to keep that job. Anybody else? Doesn't need to be from this area. Does anybody have any ideas, input, questions?
It seemed like to us that the team might go farther than just the 500 based on his income becoming close to covering tuition and food. Mm-hmm. What about everything else that the person needs? So it really seemed like there's a longer-term solution that's needed, too. And we didn't know what that would be other than possibly finding a loan or some way to spread that tuition cost out.
Yeah.
So you have a little more of it on now, but they have to pay longer on the tuition. It just seemed like there's just the 500 and that would fix the situation great, but I think it's more than that. So maybe try to help, either loan that or try to find some assistance or something you can do.
I would be a little bit skeptical unless he was a good friend who I've been for a long time, but I really trusted him that it was a good job.
Okay, let's move on. This is, I'll tell you this just very briefly. We don't have time to go into the whole story, but this is a real life situation. And when the foreigners that were involved with this person came into the situation, they did make a decision to help him out. And 4 months later, and sat down and put together a budget with him. 4 months later, when his new tuition was due, he didn't have money for that either, because he had spent his money that he was supposed to be setting aside for tuition on medical problems that he had, on sending his sister to school, and on just various things. And so, the problem does, and you don't have that information. I'm not at all saying any of your answers were wrong. But it's also just a reminder, it's not in any way, not even close to being cut and dried. Every situation is unique, and every situation like this is very difficult. And when it's somebody that you have a relationship with who is in this desperate situation, it's very difficult to know how to respond at times. So, okay, thank you for that. Let's move into the local ones. I really want to talk about these because these are more likely, probably, to happen to us here in North America. Let's look at number two. And I suspect that some of you have had this happen to you. So if you have and you've fixed the problem, I'd love to hear that. But in any case, let's talk about it. Specifically, let's hear from the group that started with, one of the groups that started with it, but then anybody, if you have any input on this, We're looking at number two. A man stops by our church on Sunday and his electric's been shut off, and he just needs 120 to get it back on, to get it turned back on. Anybody, and speak up so everyone can hear you.
I had that happen. I got a couple of rent houses, and their electricity was cut off. I hope they would move out now because it was cut off. But then they said a friend of theirs from Hawaii sent them some money to turn it on. So was it true or not?
Yeah. Okay.
So came up with ideal scenario would be to try to help them find work through connections depending on the size of your church, or even it's $120, it's a legitimate need, maybe small jobs, cleaning up outside, stuff like that. Try to provide a way of making a legitimate small income for providing for that need. Easy answer, or just a question is easy answer to give money. Could be helped more by giving time, building relationships, maybe some, what you mentioned as far as budgeting, some of that, life skills, and our consensus seemed to be that giving sometimes just seems to complicate things or create dependence on future, future electric bill and stuff like that. Personally, just giving money seems, it's harder for me to give money than to help. Otherwise, it's hard to see that I'm really helping someone.
Hey, thank you. Anyone else?
I think most of the group here at my table have been in similar situations, and it seems like often afterwards you hear a rumor or so that you maybe didn't help them a lot, but you know, maybe if you have a chance or check out the need, get those friends or so, but the donations are legitimate, or even don't give them money, but maybe help them out or go pay the electric bill in person or something. Because, you know, often the money would go somewhere else.
Yeah. That's a valid point right there. If you decide to give money, it's at least good stewardship to make sure that there's accountability there. To make sure that I gave a man at a gas station years ago. I was at a gas station and a guy came and gave me a long story about being his truck broke down. He needs just this much more money to get a tow truck. His little girl's waiting in the truck. And I gave him money against my better judgment, and he walked into the grocery store and walked out with a brown bag of, and I'm sure I know it was in the bag, and headed in the opposite direction of his broken down truck, supposedly, and waved at me as he walked away. So yes, you're right. It's very important to if you do, and that's even a separate issue, but if you decide to give money, it's very appropriate to be accountable. Anybody else?
Well, we often do their Heralds of Hope because we live right along Route 30. We get a lot of people knocking on our doors and giving us bad luck stories. They're hungry or they need gas. And so what we'll do is one of us will go with them into town to Breezewood. We'll buy them a sandwich. We'll put gas in their vehicle or whatever and take time to relate to them and to share the love of God with them and the truth of God. As someone brought out in our table, this was on Sunday. The electric bill can't be paid on Sunday.
Yeah.
So tell him to come back tomorrow to your place, and you've got a yard to mow or a garden to weed or something like that. And if he actually shows up and does that, but then, maybe go with him to the electric company or go to the electric company yourself and pay the bill rather than give him the $120 and especially if it's on Sunday,
yeah,
that would probably disappear by Monday when the electric company is open.
Right. Okay, very good. Sandy.
One thing we've learned over the years, some people, depending on your church, you might have said much, but like we'll have people from our congregation come and ask Rich, you know, I need $300 to help pay the rent. Can I borrow it? But we've made a policy not to loan money. And then we just say that up front, like if we don't have $300 to give or whatever the amount, we'll say, well, we can give you $100, but it will be a gift. It is not a loan. Because what happens, if they understand it's a loan, and we do, and they never pay it back, that puts a breach in your relationship. And and you have people then who will quit coming to church because they feel so guilty, you know, whether their story is legitimate or not. So we're like, we're not about giving out loans, we'll give out gifts. And then we're not upset.
Yeah.
Another thing, because like you said, I mean, you need to have some policies in place, but some things are not cut and dry.
That's right.
And this is a place you have to ask God, the Holy Spirit, in the moment to show you what to do in that situation. Because I just remember one time, I think someone asked me for money, for gas or something. I remember the street I was on, and I felt like I was supposed to do it. Like, you normally don't give money either, just because of, like what you said, you get taken advantage of for the wrong reasons. So I gave them the money. I remember looking back, and I had this feeling because of where they were going, like, they told me a lie. They did not need the money for that. And the Holy Spirit just said to me, I ask you to give it. Your responsibility is to obey. If they lied, you know, that's not my responsibility. Go check it. That is between them and God. And in that moment, I was like, okay, you know? So I think there's part of that we will never have five-step answers for all of this.
Right.
I still don't know how to handle all situations. Just asking God to show you in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It's a little different too, like one. If it happens once, and they come back with the same story, then you gotta say, well, or it means that when you give it the first time, you keep someone that will need to have some accountability. So then a situation where some whether when you hurt thanks you for them some up paying the rent. And so the church gave it to the person. Then she came back and at the house, and mom totally happy until dad got home. And then when he got home, so we need to have some type of accountability. And she was going out the door. She didn't have to be accountable to the situation. And then there's another situation where I remember with one church, with two churches about half apart. This guy came in and he gave. Story kind of like that, where it's needed gas to get it. And so they gave it to him, and then just a couple weeks later, he's supposed to be heading south to wherever he was going. He gave the same story, where he pulled dad's in the vehicle pulled in. So he told the other minister, hey, this guy had this story back when. So he gave the same story, and then he told him, you know, we gave you that money, he was out the door. There is people, like you said, that tend to use the directory and they just...
Right. Yeah, and that's where accountability and time, putting time into it, which is what we usually don't want to do, that's where that makes a difference. Let's move on to the third scenario. We only have a few minutes. Third scenario is the homeless shelter scenario. Again, this is very possibly or very likely a situation that you may have been in. What are some issues to be thinking about in this particular way of ministering?
Make it deeper personally by sitting down and eating with them.
Mm-hmm.
Like kind of, so that you basically bring them kind of more your equals rather than
okay.
serving them.
That's right. So put yourself on their level, sit down and eat with them.
Invite them to come early and help you prepare the food and to serve the food.
That's right. Try to involve them in preparation, in serving, in cleanup.
Yeah, but sometimes that don't work. They'll steal the thing right there, the heater, the crock pot. Yeah, I've done it to us.
Anyway, yeah, you're beating them.
Somehow they got away with it. I don't know how they did it, but they got away with it. But yeah, I worry. I mean, even then, I think next time we'll write that.
Gives it to the attitude too. If you're serving around this time.
Yeah, make right. Don't make them feel like they're a bother.
Along with that attitude, we had a situation like that at our church service at our shelter, and one of the guys that was serving. Had lost his cell phone and insisted one of the homeless guys stole it. And to his shame, one of the homeless guy found it outside where he had dropped it and returned it to him and put him in his place. It boils down to the attitude. Like, why are you even there?
Did you hear back there? He said that their church served at a homeless shelter, and one of the church members or church people accused lost a cell phone, accused or assumed that someone, one of the homeless men, stole it. And later, one of the homeless men found it outside where this man had dropped it. So he was just pointing out that our attitude is very important. And that comes back to that whole us feeling like we're better than them. That's not something that you hide. If you feel that way, it shows. And in your relationship, when you're relating to people, they will feel it if you think that you are better than them and that you're doing them a big favor, so they better be grateful type of an attitude. They will feel it.
Just turn that off.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
You would take your children along so they can experience serving others and see poverty firsthand. I very much agree with that, and I'd like to be able to do that with my children as well. But how can my children learn by serving? Maybe here's a place for a quick answer. How can we learn from their life experiences? How can our children benefit? What are practical ways of trying to make that most beneficial for my children as well as adults?
Okay, ideas. What do you see as a positive, or what are the benefits of taking your children along and letting them see this? Or involving your children in, exposing them to poverty in other ways even. I guess your question is, how can you maximize that?
I don't want to see it. I can see it, or my attitude, or I can see it developing an attitude of my children of being better.
Right.
And I don't want that at all. Mm-hmm. So I think it's more than just serving, but are there, I don't know if you had tried more input for that.
Perhaps we're tapping into the life stories of some of the, once the children are older, children, there can be a wide variation, but if the children are older teenagers and so on, everybody has a life story. And sometimes it's beneficial to hear the life stories of homeless people. And I think it can be beneficial for particularly teenagers to hear life stories.
I think also we can do with our children is to ask them to be willing, whether they would be willing to sacrifice something themselves, whether it's to sell a toy or to one of their toys or whatever, or to go without a meal or go without a McDonald's treat 1 week and give that money to help feed the poor, or to get them involved in personal sacrifice of something to help them minister to the poor people.
Could it not be an object lesson on contentment and gratitude?
Mm-hmm.
On the stewardship.
I'll just add something too from my personal experience. It's been very hard sometimes in situations like that, and because I get the God complex, to allow my children to interact in a personal way, I get a lot of fear and I don't want them going or whatever. But I think as we build relationships with those people and learn to know them, our children are watching us and they will pick up on that very quickly. And as we allow our children to interact with them also, it's good for our children to see that they're just normal people too.
Along with what you're saying, I think it's good if you have young children and they have young children to encourage them to play together. And because, kids, if they play with other kids, they just see them as other kids, and so they're going to grow up seeing these people as just other people that they get to be with, and not necessarily as, we went and did the good thing and helped these people.
Okay, we need to wrap it up, so yes.
And one of the key, big thing is it's really good to teach children serve by that level. Sammy was talking about that, having to think about the song with his arrows going forth into the archer with his arrows. Children are like arrows, they can penetrate places that us as adults can't, because they break down barriers just because of their innocence. They can ask questions and interact with people that, strangers that
And it's very true that our children will pick up on our attitudes. And so, I mean, if you want to know how to maximize it for your children, have a good attitude yourself. It makes a big difference. Just a few quick, this is not a comprehensive list at all, but just some final things to think about when you're relating to poor people, when you're in a situation where you have the opportunity to give. Stop the bleeding. That's a phrase that comes up in this book. It's not inappropriate to give. It's never inappropriate to give in a desperate situation where, okay, I shouldn't say never. Never say never, but if it's a situation where you can make a difference, life or death, of course, you stop the bleeding. And an example they give is the tsunami in Asia. Hundreds of thousands of people, through no fault of their own, are completely helpless, lost family members, lost homes, lost everything. Relief is, of course, appropriate there. That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is a little more, you know, the guy that stopped at your church to get help paying his electric bill. I mean, if it's in the winter and he has electric heat, it's one thing. If it's in the fall and it's just an inconvenience because he can't watch the game, I mean, maybe he doesn't need help right away. Maybe you need to be spending a little more time with him. So think through ahead of time what you'll do if you ask for handouts. Again, it's not cut and dried, but be thinking about it. Seek out local organizations who are doing it right, and work through them, work with them, and learn from them. It's really helpful to be able to refer somebody, or a guy comes looking for a hotel to stay in. We've had that happen at our church a number of times. And I called around and called the homeless shelters and talked to them. Actually, they knew the guy, and they said he's not allowed to stay here because of, and they had reasons that he wasn't allowed to stay there. So it's worth working with other organizations that actually know what they're doing and have experience, and they're generally very happy to at least give you advice. Find ways to give people dignity as you help them, and ideas like getting them to mow lawn or getting them to do some kind of work is wonderful. Find out what they're good at. Utilize them if they're willing and able. Don't do things for people that they can do themselves. That is a big one. Don't do things for people that they can do themselves. I don't know if any of you have ever gone on a work project, working on somebody's home that was damaged, and worked while they sat there and watched you do the work when they could have helped you. But that's what I'm talking about. You're really not contributing to their well-being in the long run. So don't do things for people that they can do them for themselves. And that might mean it's a little more inconvenient for you to have them help you make the meal, but involve them. And it's usually easier to give materially than to address a short-term need. It's usually easier to give materially to address a short-term need than to actually make a difference by taking the time to pursue a relationship. Be prepared to spend time on relationships. Find people in your church who are willing and able to do so. So I heard that coming out. I know we know it. That's the tough one, is actually being willing to spend the time. And take the time to spend time with people, to witness to them, to show them God's love, to be their friend, and to make a difference in their lives rather than just give them $120 so they leave you alone. Thank you very much for your thoughts and your time. I hope that I at least helped you think through it a little bit. Like I said, I didn't give you a lot of answers. These are great books. I have a few extra copies. If you want one, they're $12. One or two of these might have a little bit of water damage. So if you want to buy them on Amazon, you'll get them for the same price. But if you want one right now, and you have the cash, it's yours. So $12. And the book is When Helping Hurts by Steve Corbett and Brian Fickert. So you can get it on Kindle, too. So highly recommend this book if this is an issue that you at all are interested in learning more about. Thank you. You can go back to your parents.